is to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Oh, finally brought your accordion, but too late. Om Agnat Simananda Shah Gananjana Shilakya Chapsuna Meditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I'm very happy to be here with everybody. Nice crowd here, and want to wish everyone a happy new year. How do you say happy new year in Slovenia? Oh. Okay, that's good. So happy new year anyway. And have you have a happy Krishna conscious new year. So what I wanted to do this evening, I offer my obeisance to Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, who said, kindly open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, or blind in the darkness of ignorance, is to actually teach you everything about Krishna consciousness, reciting 10 basic principles. And these 10 basic principles were elaborated on or given by one of our great spiritual masters. His name was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I think some of you have understood or know who Bhaktivinoda Thakur is. He is the spiritual master of Srila Gaurakishoridas Babaji Maharaj, who is the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the spiritual master of, does anyone know? Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. This is called disciplic succession. And he has elaborated on 10 principles, which he says, and this is a direct quote from him, that a person who studies these 10 principles, which he called Dasha Mula. So Dasha means 10, Mula means like a root. So in other words, the 10 foundational principles. Then one who understands these things becomes free from ignorance, associates with devotees, and attains unlimited spiritual bliss. Pretty good, isn't it? Just by understanding the 10 principles. So hopefully, at the end of this class, everybody will become free from ignorance, experience spiritual bliss, and be ready to go back to Godhead. So it's this is part of a longer seminar that I gave on these 10 basic principles. I'm going to make it very short. It's not going to be a whole seminar. We're going to try to be a little interactive with those of you who know verses from the Bhagavad Gita. So it's going to be a little test to see who knows Bhagavad Gita tonight. Because, why we say this? Because there's two things taught in these 10 principles. One is called, here's a Sanskrit word for you all, it's called pramana and pranaya, the two words. Pranaya, actually, pranaya. And so those two words mean, pramana means evidence, you know. In other words, how do you know what you know? Because before you can understand any philosophy, you have to know who you can trust, or what you can trust, or understand basic principle, what's called axiomatic principles, upon which you base your whole philosophy. Because everybody has their own philosophy nowadays. Not only nowadays, it's always been like that. Some people have political philosophy, some people are chauvinists, some people are feminists. I won't ask you who is who here. Communists, some people are Democrats. Anyway, there's all sorts of different philosophies that people have. But we're interested in philosophy that's perfect. And so in order to have a perfect philosophy, we have to examine where knowledge comes from. Because ordinarily, knowledge comes from our tiny little brains. And therefore, because we are imperfect. I don't think there's anyone here who can say that they're perfect, is there? Raise your hand if you're perfect in this room. If you've never made mistakes, you have perfect senses, raise your hand, please. Oh, God, Mooney, no. He's a good devotee, but not that good. I mean, we're small. I mean, I can't even tell you what's going on the other side of the curtain there. You know, of course, Gornatai are there and Panchadavas there. I don't know what they're doing. You know, they're dancing, but what they're thinking. I can't tell you what's going on in the other building over there right now. You know, so I have some limitations. What to speak of my being able to tell you what the absolute truth is unless I'm told it by someone else. So therefore, before we talk about the principles of Krishna consciousness, we have to understand where we get our knowledge from. In philosophy, there's a fancy word that's called epistemology. There's a fancy word you can use to impress your friends if you want to impress people. You say, I'm studying epistemology. And everyone offers obeisances to you. You're very intelligent. Because at the university, usually you learn how to use big words to impress people. So epistemology basically means the science of knowledge. How do you know what you know? You know, because we can make mistakes. And there's something called a mirage. You can see water where there's no water. Therefore, that's called praman. And pranaya means what is to be known. Does everybody understand the difference? So these are the two subject matters we're going to talk about today. Praman and pranaya. How to know and what is to be known. You know, what important things are to be known. Okay, so these are the 10 principles, and there's also the Sanskrit, and I'm not going to recite the Sanskrit regarding these principles because it's a Sunday program. But if it was a seminar, you know, I'd go into Sanskrit and everything like that to impress you all. So the first principle listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and oh, incidentally, this aspect of listing principles has been done by many great spiritual masters through the ages, like Madhvacharya, some of you may know who he is, and other great saints have listed basic principles of Krishna consciousness. So the first principle is pramana. How do you know what you know? And the first principle that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about is the Vedic literature is the only source of knowledge about the absolute truth. Now that's an interesting statement. So let's define what we mean by Vedic. Vedic, of course, the word Vedic means knowledge. And the word Vedanta means the end or the conclusion of all knowledge. So the literatures that we term as Vedic are those that are coming down originally spoken by a person named God. Has anyone heard of God before? No. Anyway, he's the one who created everything. He's the one who's in everyone's heart. He's omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, all good, all qualities, omniprop qualities. And if someone doesn't have all those qualities of being omnipresent, all good, all powerful, and also all beautiful, attractive, and all those other nice things, then he's not God. Just like sometimes nowadays you see people who claim to be God. If you go to India, you meet many gods. Many people claim to be God. And you ask them, are you all powerful? Can you fly around the room at least? Can you at least lift the car with this? You can go over it on hill, you know, just lift the car up. You can use both hands. Krishna only used the pinky of his left hand to lift this gigantic hill. But you can lift the car. Nobody can do that. So these are the qualities of God. So because God, or Krishna, that's a better word for God. God is sort of like his position, and Krishna is the person. So when Krishna, because of Krishna's position, he's omniscient. When he says something, he's in knowledge of everything, and he doesn't make mistakes. Whereas when we say something, we make mistakes. We are not in knowledge of everything. So the Vedic literatures are expressions that have been given by Krishna that have been passed down in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. This is a very interesting principle. Does anyone know a verse that talks about this unbroken chain of disciplic succession in the Gita? What? Very nice. So, can you give the translation?
I know Slovenian.
All right, give it in Slovenian. I'll try to understand it. Huh? Can you give it in Slovenian?
Yeah.
Oh, you're reading it?
No.
Okay. И вам парам.
То наивысшее знание отдыхает по наследству духовных учителей. И в час у нас это наследство изгубило. Изгубило. И из-за того, что снова старый.
Okay. Sounds good. So parampara means it's a cyclic succession. The knowledge is being passed down from one spiritual master to another in an unbroken way. And Krishna even says in the Bhagavad Gita that at one point the cyclic succession that Krishna is referring to was broken. And so Krishna had to come down to reestablish it. So in other words, whenever God or Krishna sees that the cyclic succession gets broken, he comes down and says, you broke it. It's time for me to fix it. So that's Krishna. So, therefore, the Vedic literatures contain these direct statements by Krishna that have been passed down in an unbroken form. So they're considered to be perfect statements. However, here's what we call a however. Some of the Vedic literatures have not been passed down into cyclic succession, so we don't accept them on the same level as other Vedic literatures. Only those literatures that have come down in a bona fide sampradaya of the cyclic succession. There's four cyclic successions. There's one that we're a member of, which is called the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya cyclic succession. There's the Lakshmi cyclic succession. That's for all you ladies. And then there's the Rudra cyclic succession. You know, you have to like to destroy things. Anyway. And then there's the Kumara cyclic succession if you like kids. Because the four Kumaras are always young. So I'm just joking about those things. Okay. And they're all passing down the same knowledge from spiritual master to disciple down through the ages. And so books or literature or information that's been passed down is considered to be perfect. So that's how you get knowledge about the absolute truth. Not, in other words, if you or run into someone who says, I think it's like this, then you can doubt them, or you should doubt them. Because as our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada said, talking about the absolute truth is like a lawyer talking in front of a judge. When a lawyer talks in front of a judge, he can't say, my dear sir, you know, this is a nice guy, you know, he shouldn't go to jail. You know, because I like his smile. He has to say, in this book, you know, law book of such and such, number this, page that, it says this, therefore this. So he has to quote from a particular, what we call legalistic shastra, legalistic scripture. So that's what we do in spiritual life. That's why we can say, or I can say, I know that Krishna is God. I know there's reincarnation. Not because I had an out-of-body experience or an NDE, or near-death experience. You've heard of those things before? Because, you know, I can make mistakes, but I know because that's what Krishna said. I know that there was a birth before, and I'll take birth again, and the soul is eternal. Okay, so that's how we know what we know, just to make it brief. I have a lot more quotes, but I'm not going to give them to you. So the second truth is called, it's actually a pranaya, which means what is to be known. And the first thing to be known is that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And there's verses from the Bhagavad Gita that verify that. Does anyone know any verses about that? Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Uttamam. Purusham, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adivayam, Aham, Vibhu. Ahutstvam, Rishyak, Sarve, Dev, Karshi, Narada, Sattah. That Krishna is the supreme Brahman, the supreme abode, the supreme shelter of all living entities. Then there's many verses that state this. And also that Krishna is the source of all the other incarnations. Ete Chansa, Kalak, Pumsam, Krishna, Stu, Bhagavan, Swayam. So we can quote all these verses. Prabhupada, our spiritual master, he would always quote verses to show the authenticity of what he was saying. This actually differentiated his teachings from practically everyone else's teachings. Because not only did he quote verses to show the authenticity of where the knowledge came from, but even in his books, he had word-by-word translations of the verses. And many people before Prabhupada had published the Bhagavad Gita, but they made up their own versions of things. Like one gentleman, he published his version of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, just surrender to me, worship me, offer everything to me. The Sanskrit is man mana bhava man bhakto, etc. And he said, Krishna is not referring to himself, which is kind of stupid. You know, if I say, bring me some water, and you say, you're not talking about yourself. You're talking about the idea of water. Then I'll say, get out of here. So this is... So in other words, people use the Bhagavad Gita to present their own philosophy. I mean, one person translated the Bhagavad Gita and he said, well, this shows nonviolence. Another person said, this shows that it's not to Krishna you surrender to the unborn, beginningless within Krishna. So they're making up their own philosophy. So what Prabhupada did to establish, this is also part of what we call epistemology, the first topic, how do you know what you know, that he actually presented the verses, the translations, word-by-word translation, and the original Sanskrit. And this establishes the authenticity. So the first truth is that Krishna, or Hari means Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the absolute truth and the Supreme Lord. So the next truth after that is Krishna is always invested with infinite powers. So, in other words, there's Krishna, and Krishna has various potencies. There's one verse that probably very few people know. Parashya Shaktira Vadaiva Shudeshva Bhagi Gyanan Balakriyajan. But Krishna's potencies, he has three basic potencies, three Shakti Ishute. That is the spiritual potency, the material potency, and he has us. Anyway, Krishna Shakti Para Prakta Shetragya Kitta Para Vidyakarma Sangyanya Shatiya Shakti Ishate. So, what I mean is that there's a spiritual energy which is Satchit Ananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. There's a material energy which is just dull. I mean, this chair is not complaining when I hit it. And there's us, it's called the jiva, is a Sanskrit word. We're sort of spiritual, but we're identifying with this stuff now. So what happens if we really identify with this stuff, this table or this chair, and you know, I hit it, doesn't complain. If we really identify with it, get drunk, and you can hit you and you don't complain either. That's ignorant identification with matter. So there's different varieties of identification. So we're called the marginal potency. We can go either way. So that's the potencies or energies of Krishna. And so Krishna is invested with these infinite potencies, and Krishna's spiritual potency does anything that Krishna wants without Krishna asking it. That would be nice if we could get something we wanted without asking for it. Think about it. I just want this, okay. There was even one book written about that. It was called The Secret. Some of you may have read that book. That if you want something enough, it will come. Well, I've tried it. It didn't work. I was thinking a Lamborghini or a Maserati or something like that. And I didn't get it. So I'm not Krishna. But if Krishna wants a Lamborghini, he gets a Lamborghini. But of course he doesn't want that. He has better things to do. So, because Krishna's energies are all first-class servants of Krishna, so whatever Krishna wants, he's called Aptakama, his desires are fulfilled. So that's the nature of God. So that's the second truth. Krishna has infinite powers. The next one is Krishna is an ocean of rasa. Now, let's explain what rasa. Rasa technically means, in Sanskrit, it means taste, or having some pleasurable experience in the case of Krishna. Just like we have different rasas. You're going to eat prasadam, and so you're going to have different rasas while you're eating prasadam, right? I'm sure there's something sweet, that's a sweet rasa. I'm sure there's something that's salty, there's a salty rasa. So Krishna is not just impersonal. You know, generally you picture God, you know, what does he do? He just sits there all day judging us. You know, what a boring job, you know. This being God, you know, you're guilty, you're sinful, you go to hell, you go to heaven. No vacations he gets because everyone's dying all the time anyway. So we have rasas in this world. In other words, we enjoy it, like you're going to enjoy eating prasadam. So we enjoy doing things. Just like I was in the park, taking a walk in the park yesterday, and I was thinking I'd like to go sledding. So there's a certain rasa. I don't, what rasa would that be? That would be, you know, laughter, you know, humor, something like that. Some of the indirect rasas. So Krishna also likes to do things too. You know, Krishna may like to go sledding, I don't know. But he has loving exchanges, he has, for those of you who don't know, he has girlfriends. And also friends that he hangs out with, he has a mother and a father. He's very tricky, he has different aspects to his personality, Dhiradatta, Dhirata, Dhirvashanta, Dhiralita. He's very playful, sometimes he's serious, sometimes he's sarcastic. And in this way, he exchanges these loving relationships with his devotees. And that's very interesting about Krishna consciousness. I don't think you'll find that in any other spiritual teaching, that God is doing more than you're doing. In most spiritual teachings, you know, you can do everything, but God, you know, let him behave himself and remain where he is. Or even if he exists, you know, most people don't believe in God. So, but in the teaching of Krishna consciousness, God is not behaving himself. He's doing everything you'd like to do and more, and enjoying himself. And he never gets sick, he never gets old, never yovanam cha. And that's the nature of God. So he's an ocean of rasa. In other words, he's always enjoying. That's the real point. That's the nature of God. He's the supreme enjoyer. A verse from the Gita, so we don't prolong the class, I'll give some of the verses. Bhoktaram jagat tapasam. He's the enjoyer. He's the bogey. We mentioned that verse this morning in class. The next principle about Krishna consciousness, and I said if you understand all these principles, you become very blissful and live forever. How about that? So the next principle is the soul, that's us. We have a soul, we are the soul. Is part and parcel of Krishna. In other words, we're the same nature of Krishna. We're meant to experience unlimited rasa too. Verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Manasajtani Indriyani Prakatistani Karshti. What that verse says is that we're part and parcel of Krishna. We're emanations or expansions of Krishna, but tiny. Just like a drop of water is of the same quality as the whole ocean. So being that drop of water, somehow or other, we come in contact with something that's opposed to our nature, which is the material energy, and we're suffering. We're struggling with the senses and the mind, the six senses. You know, the six, the five ordinary ones and the mind, which is considered the sixth sense. And so if we reconnect with Krishna, then we can also experience our constitutional natural position. Right now, we're not in our natural position. You cannot possibly enjoy this world because it's not your nature to enjoy something that you're not. And enjoy in a situation that you're not. The typical example Prabhupada gives, and I'm sure you've all heard it before, is a fish cannot possibly enjoy in the dry land. You can give the fish all sorts of amenities, you know, a nice computer. Because fish using a computer, that'd be hard to picture. But so you can give a fish whatever you want, but the fish is not going to be happy unless it's in the water. So in this world, you can give us everything, but our happiness can only come when we're in a situation that's constitutional to us, which is in relationship with God. Because the real thing that makes us happy is loving relationships. You know, we're all looking for love. I mean, like that song from the 1960s, all you need is love, love. All you ever need is love. So we're all looking for that, and we want to express it unlimitedly. But we really can't do that in this world. We get frustrated. And then we have to change the situation all the time. You know, new people, new relationships, because we can't really be satisfied in an unlimited fashion. But when we connect with Krishna, then that loving propensity can expand unlimitedly. Okay, so that's the next principle. So the principle after that, now we're getting interesting. Certain souls are engrossed in Krishna's illusory energy. That's us, again. So that's Madhav Sestani Indriyani Prakritistani Karshati. That Krishna's illusory energy, as we mentioned, Krishna has a material energy and a spiritual energy, and part of that material energy is to make us think that we are this body. That we are this body, and everything connected with the body is our identification. In other words, you know, we're of a particular nationality, we're men, we're women, we're a particular religion, even religion comes as a sectarian definition. A Vaishnava or a devotee of Krishna doesn't distinguish between different religions. He says everybody's worshiping the same God. He's not sectarian, he doesn't convert people from one religion to another. So, in this world, we're under this energy called Krishna's illusory energy, Mama Maya Dharajya, which is impossible to get out of. Mama Eva Ye Prapajante. But if we surrender to Krishna, if we become Krishna, which means basically chanting his names, that's all you really have to do, is chant Krishna's names. So, we're in that position. So, the next truth listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that certain souls are released from Krishna's illusory energy. And how are they released from Krishna's illusory energy? By Krishna's mercy. Because we cannot escape ourselves. Just like if you're in the prison house, usually if it was a good prison house, you couldn't escape. And you need to get a pardon, or you need to get released from the prison house. So this material world is called Durga, which basically means a prison house, and to get out, we have to please Krishna. And the way we please Krishna is by chanting his names and serving him and helping others to understand Krishna consciousness. It's a very easy process. I mean, what we're teaching, the process of Krishna consciousness, is very simple. You don't have to give up anything that is causing you, that you're attached to in this world, but you can dovetail things. I mean, certain things. I mean, if you're attached to drinking liquor, but that's not really something you should be attached to. So, but let's say whatever occupation you have, whatever situation you're in, you could stay in your situation and just add stani stata shruti tam tan banman over here. You just add the chanting of Hare Krishna. And it follows a few principles of Krishna consciousness. Very easy principles, isn't it? Extremely easy. No meat, fish, or egg, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. Simple. So, notice I said it very quickly, so. But they're very simple, because these are called the regulated principles of freedom. Because if you don't follow those principles, let's say if you do those things that are not recommended, then you're controlled like a puppet is controlled by the puppeteer. I don't know if any of you have ever seen a marionette. You know what a marionette is? It's like these puppets that have someone below. I used to, when I was young, not before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I used to watch television shows where they had puppets. And I thought, well, the puppets are real. They're deciding they're acting on their own. Then one day, my mother took me to the television studio where they were recording this particular puppet show. And then I saw there were people underneath it. My illusion was destroyed by seeing that. So if we want to be controlled by these external forces and not have freedom, I like freedom, then we can just like do all these things, you know, illicit sex, intoxication, eating and gambling, that's up to you. And then you get all the bad karma as a result too, which is another point. So if you want to become free, then you just follow the simple principles and chant the Lord's holy names and be happy. And it's a very simple process. And offer your food to Krishna, etc. So the next principle listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that all, this is a little complicated philosophical, all the material and spiritual phenomena, that means the things that are there, are one with and different from Krishna. Wow. That's called in Sanskrit, achincha, veda, aveda, tatva, which means everything is one and different from Krishna, which means that Krishna is not 100% this chair, but this chair, this energy belongs to Krishna. Krishna's controlling it. Krishna's in every atom. It's just like the sun has sunshine. So the sunshine is the same as the sun in one sense, in another sense it's different. A verse from the Bhagavad Gita that justifies that is Maya Tatami Dam Sarvam Jagadavyakta Murtina Matstani Sarvabhutani Naham Tesho Vasata, which says that this material energy, I am pervading everything with this material energy in my unmanifest form, Krishna speaking, of course. And he says, I am in everything, but everything is not in me. So that's like a sort of a contradiction, appears to be a contradiction. I'm in everything and everything is not in me. So this is Lord Chaitanya's philosophy that is taught in the Bhagavad Gita also, how God is present everywhere, everything belongs to God, and therefore everything is meant to be used for God. Very simple principle. Next one, we're almost there. Pure devotional service is the only means for attaining the final objective of life. So, pure devotional service means to love Krishna completely without any ulterior motive. There's a nice verse from Rupa Goswami, and I'm just going to give the English, that one should be devoid of any gross, I mean, that means external motivation, or even devoid of the desire for liberation or freedom from the miseries of this world. And one should simply desire to please Krishna and do what Krishna wants in a very active way. And so that's the definition of pure devotional. So how do you get pure devotional service? Because most of us don't feel like that right now. If I say, you know, well, 50% for Krishna, 50% for me, you know, it's a good deal. Like people go to the deities in India. They have these big temples like Tirupati, which is one of the richest temples in the world. And people give money to the deities. And what they do is when they go there, they make a deal with Krishna. They say, Krishna, I'm doing this business deal right now, and if it's successful, I'll give you 50%. One person made a big mistake. When he went there, he wanted his son to get the benefit of giving the donation. So he held his son over the deity box. And this deity box is very big. It's like half his way up there. And it's this wide. And by accident, he dropped his son into the deity box. Because our donation box here is not so big, so you don't have to worry about this. It's a tiny little thing. So the bigger it is, the more you get. So that's the philosophy. And so he said, can I have my son back? And the devotee said, no, you've given him to Krishna. So just be careful when you go to some of these temples. And so they didn't give him his son back, and his son became a great devotee and served Krishna. Went back to Godhead and took the father back to Godhead too. So, interesting story. So, how do you get that mood? The question is, how do you get that mood of pure devotional service? You can't get it simply by adjusting your mind. You get it by associating with someone who has pure devotional service. That's called the bhakti lata bija, or the creeper, or the seed of devotion. There's a very interesting statement that we've been wandering throughout all these different universes, life after life, different species of life, and when we come in contact with a pure devotee of the Lord, then that creeper or seed of devotion is implanted in our hearts, and then we can actually develop devotion. So with that devotion, the seed is planted, but then we have to cultivate the seed. We have to cultivate it by hearing about Krishna. And then gradually, it's a gradual process. The process of pure devotional service is gradual. The more you hear about Krishna, the more you want to hear about Krishna. The more other things fade away, because you become so happy first thing that happens, of course, is you become immediate relief from all distress. That's the first thing that happens. Wow. Now there's a higher purpose in life. Wow. Krishna. And then after that, your life becomes more auspicious. Even materially, your life becomes more auspicious. And eventually, you come to the perfectional state. So that's pure devotional service in practice. That you associate with someone. And of course, we're very fortunate in our Krishna conscious movement. We have His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada present in his books. The nice thing about pure devotees is they don't have to be physically present for you to take advantage of their association. And you can read Prabhupada's books, you can see, you have translations in the local languages, you can hear from Prabhupada directly, you can serve Prabhupada, and you're associating with, who is Prabhupada? Prabhupada is a great personality who descended from the spirit. He's an avatar. Anyone seen the movie Avatar? Not that like that movie. But the word avatar means to cross down. And in that particular movie, he wasn't crossing down. He was going to cross. Anyway, crossing horizontally instead of vertically. So avatara means to cross down. So it's someone who comes from the spiritual world. And it may be Krishna, or it may be Krishna's devotee. Krishna's devotee is called Shatavesha Avatar, someone who's given the power by Krishna. And he comes down and to save us, basically. I mean, in every religion you have people like that, like Jesus Christ. He's also Shatavesha Avatar. He's like that avatar. And so Prabhupada came down, and he came with this bhakti, and if one associates with him by hearing, reading, serving his mission, then one gets that bhakti. So that's pure devotional service. And if you practice that under Prabhupada's direction, then you achieve the final objective of life. And of course, the final statement by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pure love of Godhead is the final objective of life. So that's interesting too, because there's two words in Sanskrit. You'll probably use the final words I'll teach you, but as sadhana and sadhya. Sadhana means the practice, and sadhya means the goal. So the nice thing about Krishna consciousness is it's both the goal and the practice simultaneously. That is, when you go back to Godhead, you still chant Hare Krishna, go on Hare Nam. And you still get to play your accordion in the spiritual. Probably the flute too, and a lot of other instruments. Keyboards, you know, electronic keyboards in the spiritual world. So, in other words, what you're doing now is eternal. With everything else, it's not eternal. Let's say I want to become a doctor. I go to medical school or something like that, and then I stop, and I don't have to go back to school. Then I become a doctor, and eventually I retire with a lot of money. So, that's what doctors are for. So, so with Krishna consciousness, the more you practice, the more you like what you're doing. Like right now, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness before any of you were born. 1971, I started practicing Krishna consciousness. And it gets better all the time. And right now, when I first joined the movement, I thought, well, I'll just chant, get free from all my distress, from all the other brahmacharis. So, but then, because I used to chant and pray to Krishna, please kill me tonight, take me back to Godhead. But fortunately, Krishna didn't fulfill my wish at that time. Krishna knew what I needed, not what I was asking for. But then, now as I've chanted after all these years, it just gets better every day, and then I just pray to Krishna, let me do whatever I'm doing forever. I mean, I wouldn't mind doing this forever. Just teaching about Krishna and traveling around, and, you know, going back to Godhead, understanding, helping people, understanding the philosophy. So it gets better and better and better. And that's the objective. So it's the sadhana is the same as the sadhya. And that's Krishna consciousness. So that in a nutshell are the 10 principles taught by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and also by our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavad Gita talks about these same principles. If anyone's interested, I can always send them something, an email that lists all the Bhagavad Gita verses that verify each and every one of those principles, because I've done a whole study on these things. Any questions or comments? We'll keep it short. Yes. Thank you for the wonderful comment.
I would like to ask, how is it with Srila Prabhupada used to say that that you get perfect knowledge by hearing it from the perfect person?
Yes.
So how does one establish authority of Krishna's words, of the Shastra, when, for example, preaching to somebody who has a different epistemology? For example, the atheists, they have their own epistemology.
Yeah, that's the problem, it's their own. So ask them, where do they get their knowledge from? That's the question I usually, I avoid arguments with people because it doesn't really help. But if people are really sincere, I say, how do you know what you know? And usually people will say, well, I don't. I mean, that's one of the things that taught me or pointed me in the direction of Krishna consciousness, is that when I was going through the university and later on, I was always asking people, how do you know that? Can you say that for sure? And usually their answer was, and first of all, they admitted, most of them were at that time, they were so honest, they admitted they didn't know things. I asked different priests, what is God like? What does he do in the spiritual world? They said, I don't know. And I said, you've been studying him for 40 years, Mr. Priest, and you don't even know what he looks like? I think you need to take another job. anything I've been studying for a few days, I pretty much have a good knowledge of. So 40 years, you've got problems there. Either that or you have Alzheimer's disease. So basically, yeah, we ask the question, how do you know? What's your source of information? And of course, we not only have the Vedic literatures, we have all these great personalities. That's another way of knowing. And another way, of course, we're also talking about faith. Like, how do you get faith, or how do we acquire faith? Faith is also acquired through practice. And when you practice something, like Prabhupada would say, using an English expression, that the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And also, when you see others practice, like I can see other people practicing Krishna consciousness, and they're becoming sainted if they practice properly. You have to also avoid offending devotees and different things like that. I mean, there's other subtle points like that. I see people become great saints. I mean, look at, there's one example of the author of one book called the Ramayana. He was actually a very low class. He used to rob and kill people before. And he started chanting. Actually, he was tricked to chant. What happened is an interesting story. He stopped some people to rob them. And they asked him, some people meant the Rishis, but anyway. They asked him, aren't you aware it's bad karma to rob people and kill people? He said, yeah, that's my job. Just like anyone else works in a factory, so he works robbing and killing. And they said, well, why are you doing it? I'm doing it for my wife and children. And they said, are you willing to go back and talk to your wife and children, see if they want to take some of your karma? I said, sure, they love me. And so he goes back and says, my dear wife, you want to take some of my karma? She said, hell no. You're the one that's supposed to work. Where are the new saris? Where's the jewelry? Get back to work, you fool. So he says, uh-oh. Then he goes to his children, and basically he says, my dear son, and his son says, but where's my iPad? I'm adding some things to the story. Obviously, he probably didn't say those things. But it's the same principle. And then eventually, this is from the Ramayana, actually, the story. And eventually he gets frustrated, goes back to the sages and says, "My dear sages, what should I do?" And they say, "Well, you should chant the Lord's name." He said, "I'm not really ready for that stuff. Give me something nice to chant." He said, "Well, we have a mantra that means death. Would you like to chant that?" He said, "Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like the music we listen to nowadays." So the mantra was Mara. So he started chanting, "Ah, it's a great mantra. Mara, 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 Ram, Ram, Ram." You know, it becomes Ram. And so he started to chant Ram's name, and then he became a great saint. I mean, doesn't that prove? I mean, he didn't even know what he was doing, and he became a great saint. That sort of proves the efficacy of the process of Krishna consciousness. Simply chant. That's all you got to do. Just chant. Everything else will come from the chanting. Everything else. Even your desire to follow the four regulative principles, whatever, will all come. If you get absorbed in Krishna's names, they are the essence of sweetness. Nama Chintamani, Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Puna Shuddha Nityamukto, Inakwam Nama Namina. That's all you have to do. Okay, one more question and then we have prasad. not me, I'm a raw foodist. Anyway, yeah.
Is then Holy Bible and Quran also Vedic literature?
You have to see if the literature has been passed down in disciplic succession in an unbroken way. Now, I'm not going to comment directly. But of course, the teachings of Lord Jesus, yes, they are perfect and pure. But if something has been changed through the ages, even with some of the original Vedic literatures, there's been some change. The Mahabharata, for example, which, you know, I like to read, and we all like stories from Mahabharata. Sripad Madhvacharya, one of our great teachers, he said it's been changed in many ways. So we don't accept the Mahabharata on the same level as we do Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, because these books have been passed down in disciplic succession. So we double check everything in terms of the books that have been passed down. So as far as any other literature, just see, have people changed it? You know, in many religions, and Hinduism is one of them, where the original teacher is teaching something pure, and then his follower says, "Well, he didn't mean that, you know, I have a better idea." That's called a theologian, or, you know, a speculator, as we say, who changes the original. Prabhupada didn't change. Like Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, we don't have Bhagavad Gita here anyway, it's called Bhagavad Gita as it is. Other people's Bhagavad Gita is Bhagavad Gita as they wish it was. Why did Prabhupada say as it is? He was the only one with the courage to actually publish the word-by-word synonyms. So you can see where it was coming from. So check to see. Unbroken disciplic succession. You know, if you're talking about the Bible, the Quran, or any other literature, see, you know, is it unbroken? Or have people added things? Or some king interceded and put his own version together just to satisfy some political whims? So just see. And I know the reason I'm following, well, the reason I'm following the literatures that come from India is because they are unbroken, the ones that we follow, given to us by Prabhupada in our disciplic succession, but also they deal scientifically with the nature of God. It's not just some vague statements. Like Prabhupada would say, we could tell you God's address, telephone number, and nowadays his email address. Prabhupada didn't say email address. They didn't have email then. But, you know, this is, because my background is scientific, so I become attracted to something that's very specific about God. And how to reach God. You know, what is the process? You go to any other, most other religious societies. What is the process to reach God? Well, meditate on silence? How do you do that? Anyway. God is not silent. He's having a good time. Why should God be quiet? He likes to speak. I mean, it's misery to be silent all the time, isn't it? He likes to speak, he likes to play. I mean, he's an interesting God. I mean, I just find practically all the other versions of God are not real, and they're so boring. Isn't it? And if I'm going to worship someone, he better be interesting and do a lot of nice things and be humorous too. If God's not humorous, I'm not interested in him. You know, if you go back to the spiritual world, there's no jokes. So forget it. I'm staying here. So, anyway, you probably can see what my rasa is with Krishna. So, any other questions? Well, actually, we should end now because it's time for prasadam, right? Oh, Gaurarti. Okay. Yeah, actually, according to this, I went too long. So, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Slovenian Yatra ki jai.